Imagine a 53-year-old man walking into a level one trauma ward. He doesn't have a medical degree. He hasn't spent 8 years in some traditional academic seminary writing, dry theological papers.
No white coat.
Exactly, no white coat. Yet, when the alarms start going off, when the attending physician has to deliver the absolute worst news imaginable, the medical staff actually steps back.
Wow.
Yeah, the hearses make room. And a grieving family looks directly at this man for survival. So the question we are exploring today is, how does a former pastry chef and elite personal trainer become the most spiritually vital person in that hospital room?
I mean, it sounds like a paradox, right? Especially if you only look at the traditional institutional mechanisms of how we assign value in the medical world.
Right, because we're so conditioned.
Exactly. We are conditioned to believe that authority in a hospital comes exclusively from like a massive multi-year academic syllabus.
The whole sit in the lecture hall, memorize the textbooks routine.
Yeah, you memorize the textbooks, you pass the written exams, and then the institution basically grants you the authority to stand in the room. But when you step into the actual world of acute human suffering, of profound spiritual crisis and neurodevelopmental trauma,
That rigid academic machinery just completely breaks down.
shit shatters. It really does.
Which brings us to the very specific, very unique mission of today's deep dive. Kobe, this deep dive is custom tailored entirely for you.
That's right.
We are speaking directly to you today, mapping out your specific terrain.
And we are dealing with some incredibly rich terrain here. To set the scene, Kobe, we are looking at a man who is 53 years old, standing on a foundation of nearly 3 decades, 30 years, honestly, of successful recovery.
30 years. I mean, when you pause and actually calculate the sheer volume of days involved in that, the staggering foundation of daily resilience it requires,
It's
it
immense.
isn't just a block of time, it's a life built through the grueling, granular, microscopic process of, choosing health, choosing service, and choosing presence every single morning. And you've paired that personal history with a professional background that requires an immense amount of physical and chemical precision. You've operated as an elite personal trainer and a pastry chef.
Which means you understand mechanics, right? You understand how components interact under heat and pressure.
Oh, absolutely.
You understand the delicate, precise timing required to build something complex without it just collapsing in on itself.
Okay, let's unpack this because, Kaveh, you are looking at the horizon right now, and your ultimate goal is to become a professional, board-certified chaplain. But the goal of our conversation today is absolutely not to dump a massive, overwhelming academic syllabus on your lap. We're not going to look at the peak of the mountain and trigger some avalanche of information overload.
No, not at all.
Instead, we are looking at your source materials, the curriculum from the Worker Education and Resource Center, the ALEPH Ordination Program, and the Academy for Jewish Religion, California. And we are extracting a highly dynamic staircase.
A staircase built on a very specific philosophical foundation, which is the next right step is enough.
I love that.
Yeah, our focus today is entirely on your agency and your lived wisdom. We are looking at how to ethically shape your lived experience into professional service.
Without turning it into just a bullet point on a resume.
Exactly. We are mapping a path that bridges your current reality directly into clinical pastoral care without ever exploiting your personal pain.
So to understand how that staircase is built, we first have to recognize the unique currency that you already hold in your hands today. Because if you want to bypass the traditional academic bottleneck, you have to bring something to the table that a university literally cannot teach.
And in the clinical world, that currency is a concept called effective resonance.
Effective resonance. Let's establish what that actually looks like on the floor of a trauma center.
Well, effective resonance is the foundational capacity to sit within a crisis without being consumed by it. Consider a standard clinical environment. You have doctors, nurses, even psychiatrists who possess staggering amounts of technical knowledge, right? They know the diagnostic criteria for a panic attack perfectly.
They understand the pharmacology required to sedate a patient.
Exactly. They can chart the symptoms flawlessly, but when they're actually standing 3 feet away from a human being who is actively, loudly
I
unraveling,
freeze
they completely freeze.
because their own nervous system spikes. It's the phenomena of emotional contagion.
Yes, exactly.
The patient is exhibiting sheer terror, and the practitioner's autonomic nervous system detects that terror and goes into a state of sympathetic arousal.
Yeah, and the doctor suddenly feels the urge to just fix the problem immediately to stop the noise, or they emotionally withdraw and hide behind their clipboard because the intensity is just too dysregulating. What's fascinating here is how someone with a background like yours alters that dynamic completely. When someone has navigated the absolute extremes of their own neurochemistry, like the extremes of craving, the reality of despair, the feeling of total systemic collapse, their nervous system learns the map of the dark.
That is so profound. You don't just know what the bottom looks like, you know the exact microscopic steps required to climb back out.
And that is a highly potent clinical tool because when a patient is in acute distress, their dysregulated nervous system is unconsciously scanning the environment for safety.
Scanning the people in the room,
In other
right?
words, if a practitioner is terrified by the patient's darkness, the patient feels that terror and spirals further. But if you sit down across from them, completely grounded, breathing slowly, unafraid of their grief because you've survived your own,
Their nervous system detects your calm.
it synchronizes with your stability. That is effective resonance. It is a profound, irreplaceable form of training that no textbook can ever provide.
I want to tie this directly to Kabi's professional background, too, because we talk about the emotional weight of 30 years of recovery, but there is also a physical intelligence here.
Definitely.
We are looking at an elite personal trainer. The currency he holds isn't just emotional resonance, it's kinetic empathy. As a trainer, you spend thousands of hours analyzing a human being under physical and emotional load.
You are literally watching the mechanics of struggle in real time.
Exactly. You
Yeah.
see the exact moment their central nervous system starts to fry under a heavy barbell.
Right.
You know when to push them past their perceived limit, and you know the exact millimeter of physiological failure where you have to pull the weight off them.
Yeah.
It is a kinetic intelligence.
It's bodily intuition.
But let me challenge the institutional premise here for a second. When we look at these source documents from hospitals and county health departments, the phrase lived experience is plastered everywhere.
Oh, it's everywhere.
Is lived experience just a polite buzzword? I mean, is it just HR speak that large medical institutions use to sound progressive on their brochures? Or is there an actual structural desperate demand for people who possess this kinetic empathy?
The source material from the Worker Education and Resource Center WERS addresses that skepticism head on. It is absolutely not a buzzword.
Really?
Yeah, institutions are aggressively recruiting for this specific background because the traditional medical model is actively failing complex patients.
Wow.
A university can teach a medical student the biological mechanism of opioid withdrawal. It can teach the neurobiology of homelessness and chronic stress, but it literally cannot teach someone how that stress actually feels in the jaw, in the stomach, in the chest.
You can't learn the texture of panic from a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah.
You can't learn the exact cadence and pitch of voice required to de-escalate someone who believes they are currently dying in a waiting room.
Precisely. WRC, which operates in deep partnership with the Los Angeles County Department of Health Services and massive entities like LA Care Health Plan, explicitly designs their workforce development programs around lived experience.
Okay.
They recognize that kinetic empathy translates seamlessly into patient navigation. They know that someone who understands human load on a cellular level is the only person who can effectively intervene when a patient is being crushed by the medical system.
So, if we establish that this 30-year foundation of kinetic empathy and effective resonance is Kabi's primary currency, the strategic challenge is how to deploy it efficiently,
Right.
because Kabi's a hands-on learner. The absolute worst possible route for him would be a crushing multi-year, purely academic
Like that
slog.
would be awful.
Sitting in a sterile lecture hall, reading dry theory, and taking multiple choice tests for 4 semesters before he's allowed to speak to a single patient, that would kill the momentum completely.
It would be deeply demoralizing. The traditional academic bottleneck is designed for people who need to learn the theory of suffering because they haven't experienced it.
Right.
Kabi already has the PhD in the lived experience of suffering. He needs a pathway that bypasses the theoretical bottleneck and gets him safely onto the clinical floor immediately.
Which brings us to the first solid landing point on our staircase, phase two, the near-term work path, specifically looking at WERS and the realm of peer support.
Yeah.
WERS is a fascinating organization. They aren't just an isolated community college offering random certificates. They are a workforce development engine deeply embedded into the actual Los Angeles healthcare ecosystem.
They are the pipeline. Their primary directive is to train the frontline healthcare workforce, specifically focusing on roles that bridge the gap between clinical medical interventions and the actual lived reality of the community.
And the very first stepping stone they offer is the Medi-Cal Peer Support Specialist certification.
Exactly.
Looking at the curriculum timeline for this certification, it is shockingly fast. It requires a baseline foundation of just 80 hours of targeted training.
Yeah, compared to a standard 2-year associate's degree, 80 hours is a blink of an eye.
It really is.
It is a mixture of asynchronous learning and live virtual training. And because Cobby is ultimately targeting the sharp end of the spear chaplaincy and high-stress environments, Work offers an additional specialization called Peer Services in Crisis Care.
Oh, that's crucial.
Yeah, that adds 40 hours to the curriculum. So for a total of 120 hours, you emerge with a state-recognized, highly sought-after certification.
Let's frame those 120 hours using a fitness analogy, right? Getting the Medi-Cal Peer Support Certification is functionally identical to getting a baseline entry-level personal training credential.
That's a great way to look at it.
When you pass that initial personal training exam, nobody expects you to be the greatest biomechanics expert in human history.
Yeah.
The purpose of that 80-hour credential is to establish foundational safety protocols.
It legitimizes your presence in the environment. It ensures you know the basic anatomy well enough to do no harm.
It gets you onto the gym floor. It teaches you the basic ethical boundaries, the high power compliance, the mandated reporting laws.
Exactly.
It ensures that while you are utilizing your natural intuitive talents for helping people, you don't accidentally step on a legal or psychological landmine. It gives you the institutional permission slip to be in the room.
And the reason Worse can condense this into just 120 hours is that they are actively relying on your lived experience to do the heavy lifting.
Right. They aren't starting from scratch.
They aren't spending weeks teaching you the definition of trauma. They are teaching you how to document an encounter in an electronic medical record system.
Which is so practical.
They are giving you the administrative armor required to survive in a modern clinical setting. And once you have that armor, WRC provides the next immediate step to operationalize it, which is the Care Navigator Apprenticeship Program, or CNAP.
I read through the evaluation of the Care Navigator Apprenticeship Program provided by SPR, and I have to admit, I initially recoiled at the title.
Oh, the Care Navigator title.
Yeah, Care Navigator. Let's be honest, Care Navigator sounds like a bureaucrat. It evokes an image of someone sitting behind a gray metal desk under flickering fluorescent lights, filling out triplicate forms, and spending 6 hours a day arguing with an HMO on the phone.
Right.
Why would someone with Kobe's profound kinetic empathy, someone whose ultimate goal is to sit with individuals in deep spiritual distress, want to spend a single minute as a care navigator?
It is an entirely fair reaction to the corporate nature of the title, but you have to look past the name and examine what the role actually demands on the ground.
Yeah.
A care navigator is not pushing paper away from the patient. A care navigator is stepping into the labyrinth with the patient.
Oh, that.
Consider a complex care scenario. You have a patient dealing with a chronic physical illness, say unmanaged diabetes, which is complicated by severe behavioral health issues and housing insecurity.
That's a lot.
And they are thrust into a massive, cold, highly fragmented medical system that speaks a language they do not understand.
To that patient, the bureaucracy itself is traumatizing. Every phone tree, every denied claim, every missed appointment feels like the system actively trying to destroy them.
Exactly. The care navigator is the human bridge across that terror. They validate the patient's deep frustration. They translate the clinical jargon into plain language. They physically guide them through the systemic hurdles. In modern healthcare, especially for marginalized populations, advocacy is the clinical intervention.
Advocacy is the intervention. That is a crucial reframing. You aren't just filing paperwork. You are regulating their nervous system so they can actually receive the medical care they need.
It is intensely relational work. You have to build trust with someone who has 1,000 legitimate reasons to distrust every institution on earth. And the method Work uses to train you for this role is revolutionary for the healthcare sector.
How so?
They use an earning while learning model. It is a formal registered apprenticeship.
When most people hear the word apprenticeship, they think of the building trades, right? Plumbers, electricians, carpenters.
And historically, the data supports that assumption. The SPR evaluation notes that in 2016, 70% of registered apprenticeships in California were in construction.
Wow, 70%.
Yeah. But Lilly RC, collaborating with LA Trade Technical College, realized that healthcare desperately needs this exact kinetic model. You cannot master the nuances of human care in a vacuum.
Let's break down the mechanics of how this apprenticeship actually functions. What are the numbers here?
The structure requires a minimum of 144 hours of formal classroom instruction, intricately paired with 2,000 hours of on-the-job training, or OJT.
2,000 hours of actual boots-on-the-ground experience. And crucially, Kobe is getting a paycheck during those 2,000 hours.
Yes.
He is fully employed by a participating community clinic while he learns the craft.
The staging of it is brilliant. You spend the first 2 weeks heavily focused in the classroom. You learn the medical terminology, the safety protocols, the basic structure of the county health system.
Right.
But by week three, you are deployed. You are on the floor of a community clinic, shadowing an experienced mentor. If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is the exact feedback loop he used for decades as a trainer. You do not master the biomechanics of a heavy barbell squat by sitting in a classroom looking at a two-dimensional diagram of the human femur.
Never.
You master it by physically moving around a living, breathing client in real time.
You master it by seeing the subtle shift in their weight.
Exactly.
You see their knees start to cave inward under the load. You verbally cue them to push the floor apart, and you watch how their central nervous system adapts to your instruction.
Yes.
The WMRC apprenticeship takes that kinetic learning model and applies it to psychological intervention. You learn how to de-escalate a patient by watching a veteran care navigator do it and then attempting it yourself under their watchful eye.
And the curriculum taught during those 144 classroom hours acts as the scaffolding for that kinetic experience. A massive component of their patient engagement module revolves around a psychological technique called motivational interviewing.
Motivational interviewing, or MI. Let's really dig into the mechanics of this, because much like Care Navigator, it sounds like corporate HR jargon, but it is actually a deeply profound psychological tool. How does it work?
Well, motivational interviewing was originally developed in the field of addiction treatment.
Oh, interesting.
The foundational premise of MI is an acknowledgement of human psychology. When someone is stuck in a highly destructive behavioral pattern, directly commanding them to change almost always fails.
Right.
If you confront a patient with aggressive logic or use fear to try and motivate them, you immediately trigger psychological resistance.
It's the ego's defense mechanism. I mean, if I tell a fitness client, you have to stop eating ultra-processed sugar right now or you are going to suffer a massive heart attack, their immediate unconscious reaction isn't to thank me.
No, of course not.
Their reaction is to internally defend their choices, to minimize the risk, or to get angry at me for judging them. If I push them, they push back.
Motivational interviewing completely flips that dynamic. Instead of imposing an external motivation onto the patient, the practitioner uses highly calibrated, empathetic questioning to draw the motivation out of the patient.
Okay.
The goal is to help the patient articulate their own intrinsic reasons for wanting to change.
Give me a tangible scenario. What does that actually look like in a clinic?
Imagine a patient with severe hypertension who flat out refuses to take their medication. A traditional theory paralyzed intern might look at the chart, walk into the room, and start reciting statistics about stroke risk.
The intern is relying on logic.
Yeah, and the patient feels lectured, gets defensive, and shuts down. The intern fails.
Okay, now swap the intern out. Put an apprentice with lived experience, someone trained in MI, into the room with that same patient.
The apprentice doesn't mention the stroke risk at all. They sit down, make eye contact, and say, "I see you've decided not to take the medication. You must have a really good reason for that. Can you help me understand what's going on?"
Oh, wow.
The patient, expecting a fight, is suddenly disarmed. They might say, "The pills make me dizzy, and I need to be alert to take care of my granddaughter."
So the resistance isn't stubbornness, it's love for the granddaughter.
Exactly. The apprentice validates that completely. They say, "Taking care of your granddaughter is your top priority. You need your energy for her." Let me ask you this. How does having untreated high blood pressure affect your ability to keep up with her in the long run?
You resolve their ambivalence by letting them hear themselves argue for their own healing.
You do.
You guide them to the realization that the medication, perhaps adjusted for side effects, is the tool that allows them to achieve their own goal. That is masterful. And honestly, it is the exact mechanism of a good sponsor in a 12-step recovery program.
It really is.
A sponsor doesn't dictate your life. They ask the piercing questions that force you to confront your own self-deception.
Which is precisely why Kobe's background is such an overwhelming advantage here. The WRC source material explicitly notes that clinic apprenticeship coordinators routinely report that apprentices with lived experience are vastly superior at these techniques compared to university interns.
Really? That makes so much sense, though.
The interns are paralyzed by trying to remember the theory. An apprentice like Kabi recognizes the texture of the resistance, drops the theory, and immediately connects with the human being sitting in front of them.
All right, let's consolidate the strategy of phase two. The Medi-Cal Peer Support Certification provides the legal and ethical foundation in just 80 to 120 hours. Gets them in the door.
Yep.
The Care Navigator Apprenticeship provides the income and the kinetic environment. By completing those 2,000 hours of on-the-job training, Kabi is accruing intense, face-to-face clinical experience with incredibly complex patients. This phase builds massive, undeniable clinical credibility.
It stabilizes his immediate professional and financial reality without forcing him into a classroom for 2 years.
But this is a staircase, not a plateau.
Mm-hmm.
Being a highly effective care navigator in a community clinic is a noble profession, but it is not the ultimate goal. The horizon we are aiming for is fully ordained professional chaplaincy.
Yeah.
And the reality of the medical system is that you cannot simply walk into a Joint Commission accredited hospital, declare yourself a spiritual guide, and expect to be hired.
You cannot. The clinical floor requires secular credibility, which RC provides, but professional chaplaincy requires a rigorous, formally recognized theological and pastoral framework. You need an institution that will ordain you.
Which presents a new challenge. How do we find a theological institution that respects kinetic learning? An institution that values the 30 years of lived wisdom just as much, if not more, than the ability to memorize ancient texts.
Right.
That brings us to phase three. The long-term chaplaincy path, and our next major source material, the ALEH ordination program.
ALEH, the Alliance for Jewish Renewal, operates on a completely different paradigm than a standard seminary. To understand the specific track Kabi would take, the rabbinic pastor program, you have to look at the philosophy of its founder, Rabbi Zalman Schachter Shalomi, who is widely known as Reb Zalman.
Reb Zalman is essentially the visionary architect of the Jewish Renewal movement.
He was a profound spiritual innovator. Reb Zalman looked at the landscape of 20th century American Judaism and diagnosed a massive structural flaw. He noted that historically, in the vibrant communities and shuttles of Eastern Europe, there was a diverse, rich ecosystem of spiritual leadership.
It wasn't a monolith.
Not at all. You had the Av Bet Din, the chief judge, who handled complex legal matters. You had Dayanim, the lesser judges, but alongside them, you had Magidim, who were the holy storytellers and preachers.
Yeah.
You had scribes, ritual slaughterers, spiritual directors, and teachers. The community recognized a hierarchy of competence based on very specific, diverse callings.
In the Alefi literature, they describe this historically as the distinction between those empowered as teachers in the broader parts of the law, the Yore Yore, versus those empowered in the strictly judicial, legalistic parts of the law, the Yadin Yadin.
Exactly. Reb Zalman realized that in America, that entire rich, multifaceted ecosystem had been flattened out. We took all of those beautifully diverse spiritual roles and collapsed them into one single monolithic title, the rabbi.
And to become the rabbi, you had to excel at the academic, legalistic study. So what does this all mean for someone like Kobe?
It means that Reb Zalman believed this flattening was starving the community of vital spiritual care. He recognized that there are gifted, mature souls who are profoundly called to serve God and serve humanity, but who have zero interest in spending 5 years arguing the minutiae of Talmudic law.
Right.
Alefi specifically designed the rabbinic pastor program for these individuals. It is a track custom built for mature adults who want to focus entirely on pastoral care, ritual craft, and holy accompaniment.
It bypasses the dry academic slog and honors the kinetic learner. It is the perfect theological vehicle for someone who wants to be on the floor holding hands rather than in the library translating texts.
Beautifully said.
But if they aren't structuring the curriculum around purely legal study, how do they organize the learning? What is the actual framework of the LITH education?
They utilize a deeply mystical, multidimensional framework known as the Four Worlds Curriculum. It is rooted in Kabbalistic tradition, and it posits that human beings, our consciousness, and our experiences exist simultaneously across four interconnected realms.
Okay, let's break down the mechanics of these four worlds. This structural framework is fascinating.
The first world is Asiya. This is the physical world. The world of action, of the body, of administration, of building things with your hands, of community organizing. It is the realm of the tangible.
So mapping this to Kobe's background, ASEA is the gym floor. It's the physical weight of the barbell. It's the heat of the pastry kitchen, the exact measurement of flour and yeast. It is the bodily reality of withdrawal symptoms.
Yes, perfect analogy. The second world is Yetzirah. This is the emotional world, the realm of the heart, of interpersonal connection, of pastoral counseling, of managing spiritual crises, grief, and the deep, often turbulent emotional currents of human relationships.
The third world.
Bria, the intellectual world, the world of the mind, of deep study, of understanding the history, the theology, the structure of the liturgy, and the cognitive frameworks we use to make sense of suffering.
And the final world.
Atzilut, the spiritual world, the realm of essence, of direct connection to the divine, of profound meditation, awe, and mystical awareness.
I have to use a fitness analogy to explain why this framework is so clinically powerful. If you are a personal trainer and you have a client who wants to lose weight and get healthy, but you only focus on the muscle, which is ASEA, the physical world, you are going to fail.
Inevitably.
If you completely ignore the fact that the client's nervous system is totally burnt out from a high-stress job, Yetzirah, the emotional world, and you ignore their complete lack of nutritional education and negative self-talk, Bria, the intellectual world, they will never achieve holistic health. You cannot treat one isolated part of a system and expect the whole system to heal.
The human being is an ecosystem. Ailie H. trains chaplains to operate across that entire spiritual ecosystem simultaneously. Consider a tangible example, like a chaplain sitting with a patient who's being forced into early retirement due to a severe physical injury.
A massive identity crisis.
Massive. An untrained person might just try to offer intellectual comfort, Bria, by saying, well, now you have time to read more books.
Oh, which fails completely.
An Ailie H. trained rabbinic pastor addresses all four worlds. They address the ASEA, the physical loss of daily routine and bodily capacity. They hold space for the Yetzirah, the profound grief and anger of losing one's identity. They help the patient cognitively reframe their future in the Bria. And they guide the patient in Atzilut, exploring where the divine presence exists in this new, painful reality.
It is a totalizing approach to care. And the Ailie H. catalog outlines some incredibly specific hands-on skills that facilitate this. They place a massive emphasis on life cycle officiation. And I'm not just talking about the standard templates of weddings and funerals.
No, the rabbinic pastor track explicitly trains you to create and hold space for the life stage events that are not historically represented by traditional rituals. People suffer in silence because society doesn't give them a framework to process certain types of grief.
Like what?
Ailie H. teaches you to craft alternative rituals for devastating events like a miscarriage.
Or crafting a psycho-spiritually satisfying ritual for the end of a marriage, rather than just letting it be a cold, bureaucratic legal proceeding. You are stepping into the gaps where human beings usually suffer alone. What other specific skills does the curriculum highlight?
There is comprehensive training in deep ecumenism, which is the ability to understand and work seamlessly across different faith traditions.
Which is essential. In a massive county hospital in Los Angeles, a chaplain is going to encounter every conceivable religious background.
Definitely. But perhaps the most kinetically interesting requirement is the Davinan's Leadership Training Institute, or DLTI.
Davinology. That word jumped out at me in the text. The art of participatory prayer.
Yes. Davinology is the mastery of public prayer as an energetic force. It isn't just reciting a litany of words from a book while the congregation stares at you.
So it's more active.
Much more active. It is understanding how chant functions as the emotional carrier wave of the text. It's learning to use melody, silence, and rhythm to bypass the intellectual brain, the Bria, and directly soothe the emotional and spiritual centers, the Yetzirah and Atzilut.
Which ties perfectly back into the rhythm of a high-volume pastry kitchen. Well, in a kitchen, the rhythm of the work dictates the energy of the room. If the expediter starts shouting and losing the beat, the whole kitchen panics. If the rhythm is steady, the kitchen hums. Davinology is using the physical vibration of sound to regulate the collective nervous system of a room.
That is a beautiful connection. And speaking of regulating the nervous system, we must examine the faculty at Ailie H. because this is where the theology meets cutting-edge neurobiology.
Oh, this is great.
For a candidate like Kobe, whose entire foundation is built on navigating bodily trauma and recovery, the Ailie faculty bios are an absolute revelation.
These aren't just detached theologians sitting in ivory towers.
Not at all. They are deeply embedded in the absolute vanguard of clinical trauma healing. Let's look at the program director, Rabbi Igal Harmelin. He is an ordained rabbi, yes, but he's also a certified master practitioner of NARM.
Arm there. Okay, we need to unpack that acronym. What is the neuroaffective relational model, and what does a practitioner actually do differently in a room?
NARM is an advanced clinical modality specifically designed for addressing complex developmental trauma. To understand its value, consider traditional talk therapy. Talk therapy is largely a top-down approach. You use the intellect and cognition, the Bria, to try and convince the body that it is safe. You analyze your past, you understand your triggers intellectually.
But the problem is, if your nervous system is trapped in a primitive state of fight or flight, your body doesn't care about your intellectual understanding. The amygdala has hijacked the system.
Exactly. NARM and other somatic approaches taught by the faculty utilize bottom-up processing. A NARM practitioner doesn't just ask, "How do you feel about your mother?"
What do they have?
They ask, "When you talk about your mother, what is happening in your chest right now? Can you track the physical sensation of that tightness?" They work directly with the physiological state of the nervous system.
They're reading the body's data.
They are helping the patient complete the biological stress responses that got frozen in the body during the original trauma. The faculty also includes experts heavily involved in Thomas Hubbell's Timeless Wisdom Training, which addresses massive collective and intergenerational trauma. You have
Wow.
instructors like Isaac Shama, who is a somatic experiencing practitioner and an EMDR certified trauma therapist.
Somatic experiencing is based on the work of Peter Levine, right? The core premise being that trauma isn't what happens to you, but what happens inside your nervous system as a result of the event. The body keeps the score.
Precisely. The ALEPH faculty understands that you cannot achieve spiritual elevation in Adsolute if the physical nervous system in Essia is locked in a state of primitive terror. They are seamlessly integrating the absolute latest science on somatic trauma resolution with ancient Hasidic mysticism.
The alignment here for Kobe is almost unbelievable. He already understands bodily trauma implicitly. He understands mechanically how addiction hijacks the central nervous system. ALEPH is offering him the theological vocabulary and the advanced clinical frameworks to elevate the biological knowledge he has accumulated over 30 years.
It is the perfect marriage of his past and his future.
Yeah.
But we have to confront the reality of the medical institution. As profound and transformative as the ALEP curriculum is, a degree alone does not get you hired as a staff chaplain in a trauma center.
Right.
To legally and professionally practice this craft in a major institutional setting, Kobe must pass through the absolute crucible of the chaplaincy profession.
The gauntlet. It is time to talk about clinical pastoral education, or CPE. From everything in the source material, this process sounds less like an educational class and more like an emotional boot camp.
CPE is the defining, irreducible methodology for training chaplains in the United States. You cannot bypass it. You cannot read a book about it. You have to survive it.
That sounds intense.
And the history of how it was created is vital to understanding why it is so difficult. It was founded almost a century ago by a minister named Anton Boysen.
Let's look at Boysen's history, because he wasn't just a traditional academic either.
No, not at all. Anton Boysen suffered severe, debilitating psychiatric breakdowns. He spent significant time as a patient in locked psychiatric hospitals. He experienced the terrifying reality of schizophrenia and psychosis.
Wow.
And through that harrowing lived experience, he had an epiphany. He looked at the theological students of his day who were spending years in quiet libraries studying ancient texts and realized they were entirely isolated from actual breathing, bleeding human suffering.
They knew the theology of suffering, but they had never met the reality of it.
Exactly. Boysen famously declared that theological students needed to study the living human document, not a book, a person.
Living human document.
Yes. He believed that the psychiatric ward was just as much a place of theological revelation as a monastery. So he created a system where pastoral students are brought directly into supervised encounters with persons in absolute crisis.
So, how does the actual mechanism of a CPE unit function today? What is the day-to-day reality of this training?
It was essentially a medical residency for the soul. A student is assigned to a specific hospital ward. It could be an intensive care unit, a pediatric oncology ward, or a palliative care hospice. You function as the chaplain for those
Which
patients.
means you are the person who walks into the room 5 minutes after the attending physician delivers the terminal diagnosis.
Yes.
You are the one sitting in the quiet room with the parents after the catastrophic car accident.
The emotional weight of that is staggering.
How does a student possibly process that level of relentless exposure to grief without completely shutting down?
That is the genius of the CPE structure. The core of the learning doesn't actually happen alone in the room with the patient. The learning happens afterward in the intensive peer group and supervision sessions. And the primary foundational tool they use for this processing is called the verbatim.
The verbatim. Let's explain the terror of this exercise. From the literature, a verbatim means you are required to document a pastoral encounter, word for word, purely from memory.
Correct.
You write down exactly what you said, exactly what the grieving patient said, the body language, the pauses, the physical environment, and then you have to present that raw, unfiltered document to your CPE supervisor and a group of your peers for analysis.
Yes, they dissect the encounter line by line.
I want to frame how terrifying that is. You are already absorbing massive secondary trauma on the hospital ward. Your nervous system is redlining. And then you have to sit in a stark conference room and let four other chaplains analyze every single syllable you offered to a dying man.
It's grueling.
They point out where you interrupted, where you missed a cue, where you offered a cheap platitude. Why on earth would the profession mandate that level of brutal psychological vulnerability?
Because it is the only effective mechanism for stripping away the pastoral ego. When human beings try to help other human beings, we are blinded by our own unresolved
That
issues.
makes sense.
The verbatim process relentlessly exposes those blind spots. When you present your dialogue, the group might point out, notice how right after the patient mentioned their fear of dying, you immediately change the subject to their grandchildren. The supervisor asks, why did you pivot? Were you trying to comfort the patient? Or were you too terrified to sit with the reality of their death? It forces the student to metabolize their own fear. It burns away the performance of caring and forces the chaplain to achieve genuine, uncluttered presence.
It is the ultimate test of effective resonance. And this is precisely why the architecture of our staircase is so vital. We have to connect this CPE crucible back to phase two, the WRC Care Navigator Apprenticeship.
The sequence is everything.
Imagine if Kobe bypassed Worksy. Imagine if he walked into his first day of a CPE unit at a massive, chaotic Los Angeles trauma center with absolutely no prior clinical experience.
It would be a disaster.
Think about the sheer sensory overload, the cacophony of the monitors beeping, the smell of antiseptic and blood, the frantic, terrifying pace of the trauma nurses, the raw, unfiltered wailing of the families in the waiting room.
The clinical shock would be catastrophic. His nervous system would immediately enter a state of extreme sympathetic arousal, and he would completely lose access to his higher cognitive functions. He wouldn't be able to learn, he would just be trying to survive the shift.
But because we have structured the staircase this way, he won't experience that clinical shock.
The sequel.
Before he ever enrolls in CPE, he will have already completed 2,000 hours as a care navigator in community clinics.
He's prepared.
He will have already spent a year navigating complex, traumatized patients. He will already know the rhythm of a medical chart. He will already know how to stand out of the way of a burnt-out attending physician. He will be completely inoculated against the chaos of the healthcare environment.
Which means when he finally walks into that hospital room during his CPE residency, he isn't distracted by the IV pumps or the medical jargon. His ASEA, his physical environment, is secure.
Right.
Therefore, he can focus 100% of his energetic capacity on the Yetzirah and the Atzilut, the emotional and spiritual encounter with the living human document in the bed.
He is perfectly positioned to extract the maximum amount of psychological and spiritual growth from the CPE process. And he is going to need every single ounce of that preparation because the ultimate destination we are targeting, board certification, demands an almost unfathomable commitment to this crucible. Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's look at the specific guidelines provided by the Academy for Jewish Religion, California, the AJRCA source document. They clearly outline the institutional parameters for reaching the absolute summit of the profession.
Board certification.
Yes, board certification is the undisputed, non-negotiable gold standard. If you want to be hired as a full-time, salaried staff chaplain in an institution accredited by the Joint Commission, which covers almost every major hospital, hospice, and military facility in the country, this is the credential you must achieve.
It is granted by rigorous national organizations like the Association of Professional Chaplains, the APC, or Neshama, the Association of Jewish Chaplains, the NAJC.
And looking at their requirements, they're not handing these out lightly.
The demands are immense. They require a graduate-level theological degree or a recognized equivalent certificate, which the Eliyahu Rabbinic Pastor Program fulfills perfectly. They require a formal, documented endorsement from your specific faith community or ordaining body.
What else?
They require the successful, grueling defense of a massive portfolio of written essays demonstrating your clinical competency in medical ethics, spiritual assessment, and interdisciplinary collaboration. And the final massive hurdle is they require the successful completion of 4 full units of CPE.
4 units.
Yeah.
Let's do the actual math on what that means for a human life. The source material notes that a single unit of CPE is typically 400 hours of combined clinical and classroom time. So 4 units.
A minimum of 1,600 hours.
1,600 hours of staring directly into the abyss of human mortality day after day, while simultaneously having your own psychological reactions dissected and challenged by a supervisor.
Hmm.
Let me build out a final deep analogy here to really drive home the magnitude of what board certification actually represents.
Okay, let's hear it.
Earlier, we compared the 80-hour worst-case peer support certification to getting a baseline personal training credential. It gets you on the gym floor, it teaches you basic anatomy, and it ensures you don't hurt anyone.
It's the entry-level permission slip.
Achieving board certification by completing 1,600 hours of CPE, that is the equivalent of becoming an elite, world-class powerlifting coach.
Let's explore the mechanics of that.
Think about what an elite coach has seen. They've spent thousands of hours analyzing human movement under extreme, almost unfathomable duress. They have watched muscle bellies tear. They have seen central nervous systems entirely collapse under crushing load.
They've seen it all.
They know exactly, down to the millimeter, what catastrophic failure looks like. And because they have survived that crucible, because they possess that kinetic library of trauma, they're uniquely qualified to step onto the platform and stand directly behind a lifter who is taking the heaviest, most dangerous, most consequential lift of their entire life.
They are the spotter.
Exactly. And what does a master spotter do? They do not touch the bar prematurely. If they grab the bar too early, they rob the lifter of their achievement. But they stand there, hands hovering, completely grounded. They absorb the tension.
Wow, yeah.
When you are a board-certified chaplain walking into a trauma ward, you cannot lift the weight of the grief for the family. You cannot cure the stage 4 cancer. You cannot reverse the car accident. But you provide the exact, precise, mechanical, and psychological support necessary to ensure that the family is not crushed to death by the weight of the tragedy. You spot the psychological weight of their mortality.
That is a profoundly accurate summation of the mechanism of chaplaincy. You are creating a safe, structurally sound container for their suffering. You intervene only when the weight is about to break them.
But holding that much weight, day in and day out, takes a massive toll on the spotter. How does a chaplain survive? As we look closer at the Eliyahu curriculum, there is one final specialized component that ties this entire psychological and spiritual progression together. It is a structural safeguard to ensure that the chaplain doesn't eventually get crushed by the secondary trauma of the ward. The source material refers to it as the Hashpa training program.
Hashpa. It translates broadly to Jewish spiritual direction. It is a deeply nuanced, delicate art. The Eliyahu program actually offers a highly unique, independent 3-year certification in this discipline.
Oh, an independent certification.
Yes. It integrates the ancient tradition of the Maggid, the holy storyteller who reveals hidden truths, with modern transpersonal guidance.
It's important to differentiate this from clinical therapy, right?
Crucially important. Therapy, generally speaking, focuses on pathology. It focuses on fixing a psychological brokenness. Hashpa is not therapy.
So what is it?
It is helping a person discern the subtle movement of the divine in their everyday life. It is helping them reframe their lived experience through a transcendent spiritual lens.
But what makes Eliyahu so incredibly responsible as an institution is how they apply this. They don't just teach you how to do it to others. They absolutely mandate that every single student enrolled in the Rabbinic Pastor Program must be in an ongoing, formal Hashpa relationship themselves. You are required to have your own mashpia, your own dedicated spiritual director.
You must have your own spiritual spotter.
You cannot safely guide a patient into the terrifying, crushing depths of the ocean if you are not regularly, formally exploring your own depths with a guide.
The curriculum explicitly states that you must engage in this reciprocal spiritual accountability. The sessions with your mashpia focus deeply on your personal relationship to the divine, the vitality of your prayer practice, and your middot, which are your core ethical qualities and character traits. You are constantly examining your own spiritual structural integrity.
Which, again, aligns so perfectly, so seamlessly, with the fundamental wiring of Kobe's life. Think about the mechanics of this. Through 30 years of granular recovery work, what is the core non-negotiable mechanism of survival?
Sponsorship.
Sponsorship. The concept of having a sponsor, of engaging in deep, reciprocal, rigorous, unvarnished spiritual accountability, is second nature to him. He already possesses the kinetic muscle memory for this.
It is the exact same relational dynamic, simply elevated to a professional, formal, theological level. He already knows how to be spiritually naked and accountable to another human being. He already knows the lethal danger of isolation in the face of suffering.
Right.
Hashpod takes that vital survival skill and formalizes it into a lifelong professional spiritual practice.
Okay, let's zoom out. Let's take a deep breath and look at the entire topography of the map we have built over the last hour. We promised a staircase that bypasses the academic bottleneck. And Kobe, the architecture of this staircase is incredibly solid.
It provides a seamless, logical, deeply ethical transition from exactly where you were standing today with the tools you already hold to exactly where you want to be without ever asking you to abandon your history or your kinetic learning style.
Let's recap the steps clearly so the map is undeniable. Step one, we acknowledge, validate, and leverage the profound kinetic empathy you developed as an elite trainer and a pastry chef, combined with the irreplaceable cellular wisdom of a 30-year recovery journey. That effective resonance is your primary clinical currency.
Step two, we strategically bypass the traditional multi-year academic bottleneck. You utilize the WRC Medi-Cal Peer Support Specialist certification. In just 80 to 120 hours of targeted training, you acquire a state-recognized credential that legally validates your lived experience, teaches you the boundaries, and gets you safely onto the clinical floor.
Step three. You leverage that initial certification to enter the Care Navigator Apprenticeship Program. You stop paying to learn, and you start getting paid to learn.
The best way to do it.
You engage in 2,000 hours of on-the-job training, mastering the psychological art of motivational interviewing, and learning how to actively advocate for complex patients being crushed by the bureaucracy. You build massive, undeniable clinical muscle.
Step four, you channel that hard-won clinical mastery into the ALH Rabbinic Pastor Program. You bypass the dry, exhaustive Talmudic legal studies and immerse yourself in the Four Worlds curriculum. You master life cycle officiation. You learn to regulate nervous systems through davenology. And you master the sacred art of Hashpa, all under the guidance of world-class somatic trauma-informed faculty.
And finally, step five. You confidently enter the crucible of CTE. Because you are already a seasoned, battle-tested clinical navigator from your WRC apprenticeship, the chaotic hospital environment doesn't cause clinical shock.
Right.
You complete your 1,600 hours, you submit your essays, and you achieve board certification for the NAJC or AAPC, emerging as a fully credentialed, elite, professional spiritual spotter.
It is a rigorous, demanding path. It requires immense dedication. But there is absolutely zero wasted movement on the staircase. Every single step actively, logically builds upon the specific mechanics of the previous one. Every step ethically shapes your lived experience into service.
Kobe, as we wrap up this custom deep dive, I really want to reiterate the core message that your support system wants you to hear today. We see the work you have put in. We see the 30 years of quiet, relentless, unglamorous daily dedication to your own healing. You are 53 years old, and the puzzle pieces of your life are no longer just scattered randomly on the table. They are locking together. The pastry chef, the trainer, the man in recovery, they're forming a brilliant, cohesive picture. The next right step is enough.
This raises an important question, a final, deeper thought to leave you with as you contemplate walking this staircase. We discussed Anton Boyson earlier, the founder of CPE. He demanded that his students study the living human document, meaning the patients in the beds. But as you move through these distinct phases, from peer support, the care navigator, to board-certified chaplain, I want you to consider how you yourself are a living human document. You are not a finished book. You are being continuously rewritten. How will the profound act of reading the grief and the resilience of others day after day in those hospital rooms ultimately rewrite your own understanding of your 30 years of recovery?
What a beautiful, provocative question to sit with. Kobe, you have the currency, you have the kinetic empathy, and now you have the map. We are wishing you absolutely nothing but the best on this incredibly inspiring journey. We'll be rooting for you.